Okay, so here we are. We're back to David again, and this promise being given to David that there would be this king that would forever sit on the throne. And we see with Abraham that there was this promise, right, that from his offspring would come a blessing. But we didn't really know anything at that point of what that looked like. Nothing at all, okay? Now with David, who's part of Abraham's offspring, right? He's part of that family that came from Abraham. We see here in 1 and 2 Samuel how that blessing, we get a little further of a hint anyways, of how that blessing might work itself out to Israel and to the world, how that shalom might come. Somewhere we see that there's going to be this king that is going to come and he'll reign forever. Okay, now you said this, and this is just an aside here, that clearly part of this promise is going to also be fulfilled in David's own son, Solomon. This isn't just about a king to come. This is also about the king named Solomon, David's sons. And this is really kind of normal with the way that we read prophecies throughout the scriptures, including in the New Testament, okay, that the words have a present-day fulfillment to them and a present-day meaning to them. But then they also have these inklings, right? These little whispers of days yet to come. And the challenge that most face is that we take these things as one entirely or the other entirely. Like that these prophecies are entirely about the future and nothing to do with present activities and present day, or they're entirely about things that were present day and that happened a long time ago and they have nothing to do about the future. Okay, so let's take Revelation, for example, last book of the Bible, filled with these incredible visions and scenes. And most people, and if you're like me, I have too until the past number of years, just feel like, hey, this is just a totally future document, right? It's just dealing with things that are yet to come. But it's not. The opening words of Revelation tell us that that letter, those visions, were given to seven churches in Asia Minor. And they were specifically speaking to them about events that were taking place to help encourage them through persecution that was going to come. And yet at the same time, when you read through Revelation, you know that there are flashes, right? There's these inklings, there's these shadows of things that were not fulfilled in the time of those seven churches in Asia Minor. There's these both end in these prophecies, right? And that this is clearly one of those cases where the promise to David had something to say about his day and about his own son establishing. David's son Solomon did build an actual physical house for God, a physical temple. And he did sit on David's throne. And he was punished by God and all the rest of those things, right? And he was a failure in many days. But it also has something to say about events that are yet to happen. Most obvious is that one day this king is coming from David's line, and the king would sit on the throne forever. Solomon never sat on the throne forever. But this king was going to sit on the throne forever, and he would establish a house, a temple for God's presence to dwell on earth forever. Okay? So I say here, could it be that he, like David, this king that was coming, would also be about bringing shalom? Now, as David brought shalom into his people and they experienced all this blessing, could it be that this king, this forever king, was going to be doing the same? The other question is, well, who is this king going to be? But again, in 1 and 2 Samuel, we don't have any of those clues. We don't know anything. Just know that a king is coming, he's going to sit forever, and somehow this is also part of that blessing given to Abraham and the promise of blessing. Okay, so after David dies, 1 and 2 Samuel finishes up, and then along come these books, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. And both those, or those four books, both those, you know, big books, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, basically tell the exact same story. And they tell the story of how, unfortunately, after David and then after Solomon, basically the nation of Israel almost immediately goes south, right? Again, just spiraling into the decay. The books kind of chronicle, to use the title of one, this long descent, this long spiral into descent. After Solomon, the nation of Israel divides in two. So you see that strife entering back in, even among the own people of God. There's the nation of Israel in the north and the nation of Judah in the south, which comprises Jerusalem. So the nation divides, and we read about that in 1 and 2 Kings. And then right away the people begin to worship Baals, and they worship the foreign gods. And then toward the end of 1 and 2 Kings, as king after king after king, with the odd king that does well, but again the next one after doing poorly again, by the end of it, we see these kings, and we see things of them sacrificing their own children to appease foreign gods. And finally, in the end, we see that the worship in the temple and the worship of God and the following of the law, it ceases altogether. Nothing left of it. The nation has completely forgotten God. He's gone. This is what 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles record. The thing about it is that along with all of this, along with the spiral into descent, God continues to remain faithful to the people. He cannot go back on the promise that he gave to Abraham. He will bless the people. And he's still intent on bringing them shalom. And he was so much so that he did this by raising up then these people that were called prophets. Right? Oh, sorry, my slides again. You've got them all on your paper anyway. So the prophets, he raises these people up, and they were given the job of going to speak to the kings and going to speak to the rulers to announce to God's people to turn back, to go back to God. Now, here's how this works, okay? So you have these books, 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles, and then at the very end of the Bible, you have these books called the prophets. There's five big ones: Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Lamentations, and Daniel. And then there's 12 smaller ones, the 12 minor ones, they call them. All of these prophets, they kind of link in with the stories told in 1 and 2 Kings. Okay, so when you read through 1 and 2 Kings, you'll read about Isaiah coming and speaking to this king. And you'll read about Jeremiah speaking in 1 and 2 Kings. But what the prophets are then, the books in the Bible called, by this title, they're the recordings of what it was that those men spoke to the kings. Do you see how that makes sense? How they fit together like that? Yeah? Does that make sense?
Lamentations.
What's that?
What's Lamentations?
Oh, you're asking me too much there off the top of my head. Okay. I can look at it again. I know much of these things, but not all of those things. Okay, so the prophets come announcing and calling everyone to turn back and warning them about that. And finally then, in the midst of this, as they go further and further away from God, then the prophets begin to start to warn the people of Israel that if they don't turn back, there is going to becoming a discipline against the nation of Israel. Okay, so the prophets start to warn the people then that God is going to raise up a foreign army. First is going to be Assyria. The nation of Assyria is going to sweep in and lead the people of Israel into captivity and into chains. Then when we read in the prophets, we see how they tell about how Judah, the kingdom in the south, that Babylon is going to sweep in and take Judah into captivity and exile in discipline for their failing of God, for their failing to live up to the covenant. Nobody listens. And so in 722 BC, we see in history Assyria come in and wipe out all the northern tribes of Israel, leading them away in chains back to captivity. And then in 588 BC, 100 years later or so, we see Babylon come in, doing exactly the same thing to Jerusalem, to Judah. Isaiah 8 says this about the Assyrian invasion. Because the people had rejected the gently flowing waters of Shiloh, in other words, they rejected me, and they rejoice over Rezin and the son of Ramallah. Son of Ramallah was one of the kings of Israel, and he had made a pact with a foreign king by the name of Rezin to attack their brothers in Judah. And God did not like that. He did not like the internal fighting and the disunity. Therefore, the Lord is about to bring against them the mighty flood waters of the river, the king of Assyria, with all his pomp, and it will overflow all of its channels and run over all of its banks. When I was in Israel, I visited one of the places. This is a city in Israel that was called Lachish. This is what Lachish would have looked like in its day. This picture over here is taken from this perspective over here, looking up over here. When Assyria came, they built a massive siege ramp up the one side. You can see stones and the remnants of that. Stone by stone by stone, they built up a siege ramp, brought the battering rams up it, and smashed against the wall. You can read the story in 2 Kings about the demise of Lachish. But this is one example of what Assyria did in the land of Israel. They turned away from God. God warns them with the prophets, turn back, or there will be discipline. Turn back, or there will be discipline. I will have to discipline you. I will have to put you through testing, just like we do to our own children. Kids, if you're going to go off straight, I have to discipline you in order to woo you back to me. This is what God did. As troubling as that is, what we also need to understand, though, is that in the midst of all these warnings that the prophets were giving, of these coming invaders, they also promised that one day the discipline would come to an end, that it would not go on forever. And what each of the prophets described, and if you look at it like the whole picture, like a puzzle, each of them had a piece of the puzzle that they contributed to this story. But what they described together was that God was going to make good in the end on his promise to David and ultimately to Abraham. One day, the prophets spoke of this idea that one day God was going to raise up this great figure. This is what the prophets talked about. And they used different names for him. We saw last night, they used the name Messiah, or Anointed One. They used the name Servant. The Servant was coming. They used the name Mighty One. Mighty One was coming. Daniel uses the name the Son of Man to describe this figure. Despite the varying names, it's clear that whoever he was going to be a mighty king, a forever king, the fulfillment of the promise given to David. And the prophets then, like a piece of a puzzle, all point to the various things that they tell us then that this Messiah king is going to do. First thing they say was that he was going to come as a warrior. The Messiah was going to come and wage war against the enemy of God's people. Isaiah 11:4 talk about that. We'll read these in a second. Second thing this Messiah, the prophet said, was going to do was that he would then gather up all the exiles, all these that had been held in captivity, and he would bring them back to himself. But more than that, he would also, the prophet said, he would also call the distant nations and the islands to himself as well. He wasn't going to just woo Israel to come out, but he was going to woo the whole world to come out to himself. The third thing the prophet said was that he was going to establish a kingdom in the world, a kingdom of righteousness and justice and shalom, or peace, which would never see an end. And the fourth thing was at the center of it all, he would establish a temple. Zechariah talked about this. And why would the Messiah, the servant, want to establish a temple? The temple was the place where God dwelt on the earth. And so it was the sign that though they had rejected God, and though the temple, and incidentally Assyria wiped out the temple, or Babylon did, Babylon wiped out the temple, the idea of the Messiah rebuilding the temple was then going to be the sign that God was again going to dwell with the people on the earth. And here's the key, though, is that at the very heart of this, the end result of all of this would be shalom forever. Ultimately, the Messiah would bring shalom. He would restore to Israel, and he would restore to the distant nations and to the islands. Shalom. Okay. Let's read a couple of examples. Oh! Nope, 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 nope. That's not your fault. That was mine. Let's read a couple of examples of how, just fine, it's fine, how Isaiah talks about this. We'll just read Isaiah stuff, okay? So Isaiah chapter 9, we'll read a few verses from Isaiah 9. And I'll see if I can help interpret as we go along here. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, which are just parts of Israel. He humbled them. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles. Hinting, who came from Galilee of the Gentiles? By the way of the sea along the Jordan. And this is what Isaiah says, verse 2. The people walking in darkness, so they're in captivity, have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoices the harvest, as men rejoice when dividing their plunder. For as in the day of Midian or Israel's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bars across their shoulders, the rod of the oppressor. See, the captivity is being broken here. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for the burning. They will be fuel for the fire. Why? Well, we don't need warrior's boots anymore. That day is over. For unto us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government, again, remember, he's a king, peace, and the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Here's the key. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on forever. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty himself will accomplish this. Okay, go over to chapter 11. Here's another example of this kind of speaking from the prophet Isaiah. A shoot will come out from the stump of Jesse. Who is Jesse?
David's father.
David's father, that's right. From his root, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. Remember yesterday I talked about the anointed one. He was going to be an anointed one. He was going to be the one that bore the Spirit of God. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. It will be a spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the spirit of counsel and of power, the spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor. You see how this king's going to act in the world? It's all about shalom. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. Here's the warrior. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. He will slay that enemy that has brought evil into the world. Righteousness will be his belt and faithfulness the sash around his waist. Look at this imagery. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. Pictures here of peace, of harmony. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young lie down together. The lion will eat straw with the ox. The infant will play near the hole of the cobra, and the young child put his hands into the viper's nest. They will neither harm him nor destroy him on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The whole earth will be filled of the wonder of the Lord. In that day, this root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the people. So you can imagine him with a banner out. And the nations, it says, will rally to him. And his place of rest will be glorious. In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left from his people, from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elon, from Babylon, from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. See, he is gathering the people together. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the six scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. Okay, let's read one more from Isaiah 52. Isaiah 52. This is also about the servant. And incidentally, toward the end of Isaiah, there's a number of these chapters that are referencing and referring to this great servant. That's who Isaiah refers to him as. This is what Isaiah 52 says. The prophet speaks out to this Israel, this Zion that's been asleep in captivity. Awake, awake, O Zion, and clothe yourself with strength. Put on your garments of splendor, O Jerusalem, the holy city. The uncircumcised and defiled will not enter you again. Shake off your dust. Rise up, sit enthroned, O Jerusalem. Free yourselves from the chains of your neck, O captive daughter of Zion. For this is what the Lord says. You were sold for nothing, and without money you will be redeemed. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. At first my people went down to Egypt to live. Lately Assyria has oppressed them. And now what do I have here, declares the Lord? For my people will have been taken away for nothing, and those who rule them mock, declares the Lord. All day long my name is constantly blasphemed. Therefore my people will know my name. Therefore, in that day, they will know that it is I that foretold it. Yes, it is I. Now, these are familiar words here. How beautiful on the mountain are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, and who say to Zion, your God reigns. Listen, your watchmen, lift up their voices. Together they shout for joy. When the Lord returns to Zion, they will see it with their own eyes. Zion being just another word for Jerusalem or for Israel. Burst into the songs of joy together, you ruins of Jerusalem, for the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord will lay bare his holy arm. There's warfare again. In the sight of all the nations and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. Depart, depart from there. He's calling them out from where they've come. He's calling them out from their chains. Depart, go out from there. Touch no unclean thing. Come out from there and be pure, you who carry the vessels of the Lord. But you will not leave in haste or go in flight, for the Lord will go before you. The God of Israel will be your rear guard. Okay. There's a lot in there, obviously, right? We just read through. So, with all of that background, though, in mind, about 700 years after these words have been written, you can imagine that the hope for their fulfillment, right, is like tangible. People, 700 years later of Israel, are still under captivity. Now it's to a nation called Rome. They're still under captivity. And they're reading these words of the prophet. Incidentally, there really hadn't been any more scriptures written in between those times that were valued by them to the same degree. They're in captivity. They know that none of these things have come true, and they are longing for this day. They're longing for this to happen. So can you imagine then what might have been going through a little teenage girl whose name was Mary when an angel woke her with this: do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will be with a child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, which incidentally means God saves. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will never end. How could I be deserving of such a thing? Or a little while later, when all of a sudden there's shepherds out in the field, and again the angels are there, and the angel said to them, don't be afraid, I bring you good news. How beautiful on the mountain are the feet of those who bring good news. How beautiful on the mountain will be the feet of this servant. For I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you, and he is Christ. He is the Messiah, the Lord, and this will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths lying in a manger. And suddenly a great company of the heavenly hosts appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth shalom to men on whom his favor rests." And then you can imagine what the crowds might have thought 30 years later, when now Jesus has become a man and finally for 3 years he's going to begin his official ministry and teaching. And this is what happens when he goes back to the hometown where everybody knows him. He went to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue. This was his home church. His home synagogue with all of his people. And incidentally, Nazareth at the time was a small little hamlet of people. They all would have known Jesus, as was his custom. And he stood up to read. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed him. He was going to be doing the reading that day. And unrolling it, he found the place where it is written from Isaiah, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, the Anointed One. Because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Now is the time of favor, Israel. Then he rolled up the scroll, you can imagine this, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. And the eyes of everyone are on him. And he says to them, "Today, this is fulfilled in your hearing." Yeah. Yeah.
Was it, like, did Mary and Joseph just totally keep it a secret forever that Jesus was the Son of God? Like, did people not be like, "Oh my gosh, I can't wait till he grows up and we're going to see what's going to happen"?
Well,
born to a virgin. Like, I don't know.
We don't know much about those early years. We know that her sister-in-law, Elizabeth, right? John's mom, knew about it. Beyond that, we don't really know anything else.
I wouldn't believe that.
No. Of course not.
I'm sure they didn't go rushing to tell everybody that their kid's the Messiah.
Yeah. In that day, wasn't claiming to be born of a virgin kind of pretty common? A lot of other gods were all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that wasn't entirely an unusual thing for people to have said that, the virgin part anyway. But you got to realize that when Jesus then began to preach, and this is his opening time, this is when it's all beginning, and he's standing there, you've got to know that everybody was looking at him, like I said yesterday, and the questions were beginning to roll. Really? You're the one? Really? You're Joseph's son. You're a carpenter. Where's the warrior thing? A carpenter. Today this is fulfilled in your hearing. And so it begins. But you see, the point today is that none of this really makes sense. The angel's announcement, Jesus standing up here, and for that matter, the rest of the Gospels really don't make sense if you don't know the rest of the story. The whole story is there to make the climax make sense. And I've just given you a survey in about 70 minutes of the Old Testament, which is thousands of pages long. When you begin to unpack it, you realize there's so much more. There's so much there that's backfilling in this story to build up toward this climax so that we can know, oh, this is the plan of God. Jesus is stepping into the line of David to be a king forever, to bring liberation to the world. The question for us is this: did he do any of it? Did he do any of what the prophets said the Messiah was supposed to do? Did he wage war? Did he build a temple? Did he lead exiles back out of Israel? Did he establish a kingdom forever? That's where we're going to pick up tomorrow.